I want to thank the University of South Florida St. Petersburg campus staff for all they've done to make our club welcome. And Andy, I worked with you before. Thank you again for all that you've done. We appreciate your work. And on behalf of the university in this beautiful campus, we're going to have Carolyn Nesbitt come and bring greetings from the university.
Hey there. Good afternoon. Thanks for being here. We are delighted to host Suncoast Tiger Bay today for this discussion on the future of higher ed in our county. My name is Karen Neesmith. I am Director of Community Relations here on the USF St. Petersburg campus. And I want to spend just a few minutes telling you about our beautiful campus, which is filled with some very talented faculty, staff, and students. So you may know that we are Pinellas County's only residential public research university with a 52-year history as a regional campus. You may know that we have approximately 4,300 students and 38 undergraduate and 17 graduate programs. But those are the basics. In my role, I communicate a lot about the university, and I often hear folks saying, wow, you do that on campus? I didn't know. So I want to tell you about five things that maybe you don't know about the USF St. Petersburg campus. Number one, our Innovation Scholars Program. We are placing first-year students with professional mentors in our community. Last year, we placed about 80 students and 62 organizations and businesses in our community. And their very first semester, they explore different career fields, and we are now piloting a second semester where they do a professional development academy and are placed in a work experience. It's the only program that we know of this kind in the state of Florida. And if any of you would like to mentor or host a work experience for one of our students, please come see me. Number two, we have created a consortium with institutions of higher learning in our county, including St. Petersburg College, Eckerd College, Stetson Law School, and our campus, USF St. Pete, to promote racial justice. The St. Pete Pinellas Higher Ed for Racial Equity, or SPHERE, consortium launched a racial justice fellowship program last year. We have students from all four of our campuses who meet together and have a curriculum aimed at placing students at the center of creating systemic change. They will conduct internships this summer in the mayor's office and the Black Health Equity Alliance with the NAACP, with the Well, and with the Urban Youth, or with the Youth Farm. Last year, SPHERE received a national designation as a Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation Campus Center. And we will be a resource to all of Pinellas County, and we're now part of that national network of other TRHT centers throughout the nation. Number three, we have world-renowned faculty. For example, did you know that J. Michael Francis was recognized earlier this year by the King of Spain? He's a history professor who studies the early Spanish roots of Florida's history. Or did you know that our biology professor, Heather Judkins, was part of the first research team to ever film an elusive giant squid in U.S. waters? Or Dr. Joan Reed, a top national expert in human trafficking, and her partner, Dr. Shelley Wagers, who launched a trafficking in persons lab last year to collect data from around the state. And these are just a few examples of the cutting-edge research we're doing every day here on this campus. Number four, our amazing students. We have accounting students who offer free tax prep services to low-income and middle-income residents in Pinellas County. Over the last few years, we've generated over $1 million in tax credit refunds for residents. We have a student green energy fund run by a group of students who propose and develop projects to make our campus more sustainable. We have a puppy raisers club. We have students, if you see little labs running around campus, they are with students that are training students for Southeastern Guide Dogs. Our students are remarkable. And finally, number five, we're a campus on the rise. Maybe you've heard of the Environmental and Oceanographic Center of Excellence that's coming to this campus. which was allocated $75 million by the Florida legislature. We're still waiting for the governor to approve it, but we feel optimistic. We also, last month, received $14 million from our good friends Kate Tiedemann and Ellen Cotton for a hub for financial technology, or fintech. And soon, we'll be welcoming a new regional chancellor. We are so sorry to say goodbye to Dr. Tadlock. He's done a masterful job in this last 5 years leading us. But all of these will culminate in a transformation of our campus. So there's a lot of exciting things happening here. I'm your campus liaison. Please reach out to me. I'd love to find ways for us to collaborate. And now I will turn it over. Thank you so much.
Dr. Williams, first question for you. We have seen historic appointments in our city and nation, from the election of Mayor Ken Welch to the Honorable Judge Jackson Brown on the Supreme Court, and your impressive selection as the president of our city's college. What has been your greatest achievement so far, and why is it important that we elevate these stories?
Wow, thank you so much. I don't know what my greatest achievement has been. I think a lot of people might say it's being the first African-American and female president of St. Petersburg College, a school that at the time I started was 90 years old. We're now just about 95 years old. But I think one of my greatest accomplishments that led to that was being willing to listen to others and to be mentored by people who know what they're doing out there, who can help lead the way, and being willing to listen and learn. I think being the president of St. Petersburg College has been a huge opportunity for me, but also for others who are like me, who are interested in thriving and doing something different. The hardest part about it has been, just like COVID, living with the unknown. Mm-hmm. Not really knowing what's gonna happen, when it's gonna happen, and how you're going to respond to it. And so I would have to say what led to my presidency is being mentored and learning to listen and learn from the best. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Dr. Tadlock, your first question. Congratulations again on your retirement.
He's not retired.
Yeah, you didn't hear?
I mean, he's not gone.
Well, that's the next sentence.
Okay.
You are still working hard. So good that everyone knows each other. Dr. Tadlock, will you reflect, you mentioned this at our legislative meeting we had earlier. Can you touch on how successful the legislative session was for the college this spring?
So far, not at all, because the governor hasn't signed anything. But the session resulted in operational increases for the University of South Florida of about $58 million for operational costs, which is ongoing recurring dollars. And USF has not received any increase in operational costs from the legislature since I've been here in 6 years. So as USF, one USF, they haven't received any. So that's a big piece of what we need. This campus received $3 million in recurring dollars for the budget because we run a separate budget from the Tampa campus in Sarasota campus as well, and $6 million in what used to be called deferred maintenance funds for facilities. It's called something else now, but same idea. And funding for the civic engagement, civic fellows program on this campus, which is a statewide program, so for this campus. And then the big one, of course, was mentioned earlier, the Environmental Oceanographic Sciences Center and the plans for that, which is an interdisciplinary center focused on environmental education, sustainability, oceanographic. College of Marine Science is included in that at the undergraduate and graduate level. That center is supposed to be that kind of place. We asked for $35 million. We got $75 million. So I don't know how that happens, but you know, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth. So $75 million in funding is proposed to help fund that $80 million facility, and we have to raise the additional funds, including the funds to put stuff in it because with the funding, you get the building, mm-hmm. but you don't get the lab equipment and everything needed. But it's a really good year for USF if everything gets signed off.
Additionally, Dr. Tetlock, can you reflect on your tenure here at University of South Florida?
Chaos. Controlled chaos. A hurricane, Judy Genshaf, Steve Corral, Rhea Law. I've been here 6 years. We've gone through that level of change at the USF in terms of presidential leadership. And on this campus, of course, consolidation and COVID that everybody has experienced. It's been a very, what I would call the most disruptive 6 years of my 42 years in higher education. I've been privileged to experience that here. But the team of people that formed that nucleus of what we do here has sustained us so that we've accomplished also more, in my opinion, in 6 years of my 42 years of time in education than anywhere I've ever been. And so this place is still distinctively University of South Florida, St. Petersburg. We're not Tampa and we're not Sarasota, and we have distinctive programming and opportunities available for students here you can't get on those other two campuses. And we've been able to do that, hang on to that, and grow that over the past 6 years. And I'm most proud of the leadership here and the students here that have continued to make that a priority here.
Okay, a question for both of you, and Dr. Tetlock, I think that I want you to address a different kind of spin or answer to your portion of this question, which is, we know that access to higher education is important and that there have been barriers that have been limited or denied communities of color from post-secondary education opportunities. We also know that there was quite a bit of publicity and concern about USF St. Petersburg not being able to effectively recruit or retain black students in significant numbers. So, I think also for Dr. Williams, I want to talk about the uniqueness of being a college here for St. Petersburg College, and then for you, Dr. Tetlock, to talk about what could be the challenges and how can we overcome getting black and brown students to choose this campus and to be here. And again, to be honest, our son graduated from University of Florida, Tampa, because the experience was going to be very different for him over there than here. So because we're all adults and this is a mature, safe space, let's talk out some of the stuff that we sometimes don't get a chance to talk about. Doc, you want to go first?
Okay, will I still be able to go back and answer the legislative question?
You got money too?
Yes.
Well, go tell us.
Okay, thank you. So, you know, USF and SPC are two different institutions, both doing great. I think that state colleges are always undervalued, and legislatively, it has been difficult for the last decade or so for us, not for the universities. And this year is the first year that the state college system has been provided with recurring dollars in their base, which is a big deal. I think what's happened over the last couple of months, maybe the last 2 years, is the state is really understanding how workforce development is more mm-hmm. important, yeah. and providing those short-term rapid credentials are important to keep our communities thriving. So for St. Petersburg College, we've been able to get, if the governor signs it, $47.5 million in deferred comp. We have 11 campuses, 42,000 students, so we do need our buildings upkept. We received $5 million in recurring for operations. We received $5 million to construct a workforce building and a new collegiate high school for workforce. We received $2 million to expand our nursing program. We will be doubling nursing. We'll have an evening track starting in August and a weekend track of our nursing program. In August, we're expanding our public safety and received a little less than $1 million to bring more crime scene investigation and other things like that to the college. And a lot of it, like Dr. Tetlock has done, is going up to Tallahassee, meeting with our local delegates, delegation, showing them what we're doing and providing the output. And so anytime you have a chance to talk about our great university and state college, keep in mind that we're still serving a large number of underprepared students. At SPC, 75% of my students need some sort of help to get a leg up. And so as you have those conversations, please keep that in mind. Okay, what was the real question?
No, but you answered it. And I'm glad you, the term you used about workforce reminds me of something that you did very early on when you met with ministers to see what areas we could work together to, because we don't have a seminary here, we don't have a Bible college here, what areas, and so I appreciate that you are constantly looking for ways to serve the residents here. And that would be an ad for our faith community to have that kind of training and that kind of relationship. And so you brought that to the table for us. So I was asking the question about keeping black and brown kids in school, retaining them, and those challenges. And you, when you mentioned coming in from the Pinellas County school system with...
We have a large number of students who need extra help. Mm-hmm. It's just a different way of learning. It's just them not being as prepared. So as an open door institution, we take individuals with a GED, high school diploma, and warm blood in their veins. Mm-hmm. That's it, they're in. And so our job as an open door institution is to help them achieve their goals. So free tutoring, 24/7 plus face-to-face till 10 at night. We offer free mental health sessions for our students. We have food pantries on every campus. We also offer free bus passes. If they have their SBC ID, they can ride PSTA anywhere, anytime, any day. And we work very hard to find new ways for students to learn. It's not just standing in front of class and reading a PowerPoint. And that's the changes that we will have to make. Now that we are even deeper into workforce in short term, we're looking at high wage paying short-term credentials like the line worker mm-hmm. program with Duke Energy, 14 weeks of training, $55,000 starting. You don't even have to have a high school diploma for that one. And so I think our job is to make sure that more minority students have access, but also they're successful. More underprepared students, more students living in the poverty zip codes. We do a lot of zip code studying, and we pay attention to our students coming in to make sure they have what they need to be successful, because everyone does not start at the start line of a race. Some people are way behind, and we have to work to catch them up to get them prepared. One of the most frustrating things that I deal with is that the average age of our student is 27. Saturday I graduated a 16-year-old and an 84-year-old. Wow. So our range is wide, and what happens is you have to try to fit the needs for all of those type students in one bucket. And our minority students don't thrive at the same rate. We're proud to have closed the achievement gap a lot more with our African American males. We received $1.5 million from the Helios Foundation to do just that, to work with our black men. And we're working on something with our Hispanic students, sensitizing the employees to make sure they understand the students they serve is critical. We're not Harvard, we're not Yale, and we're proud of that because many people's lives are being changed one credential at a time.
Thank you. Doc?
We do a lot of the same things that St. Pete College does in terms of providing our students all of those supportive resources when they come here. We have the highest Pell rate of any of the three campuses in St. Pete, so 43% of our students are Pell eligible students still who come to this campus. And I'm just going to be real candid with you about how things have evolved since consolidation. Prior to consolidation, we were admitting students because we were a regional university. We weren't an R1 top 25 tier university with preeminence admission standards. We were not that. And so we were admitting students with a weighted GPA averaging around 3.3, 3.4 on a weighted GPA. So we were serving the community at a much broader, in a much broader context. When consolidation happened, we become part of USF, which is a preeminent top tier research institution. Everything changed in terms of admission requirements. Our weighted GPA, average weighted GPA in USF is 4.18 with a 1320 SAT. So first of all, you've got a really high benchmark for students to be admitted to the USF, and we do not admit them here. They are admitted through Tampa. one admissions office in Tampa, nationally recruited, internationally recruited, and admitted there. And when students get admitted there, they choose which campus they would like as a first, second, or third choice. And most of the information, because of a transition, it takes time for these things to work out. Most of the attention is on the Tampa campus because, of course, that is seen as the mothership or whatever you want to call it. And so a lot of students, that grabs them first. And in fairness, that campus is over 50% non-white. It's very diverse. It's more diverse than we are. We're 54% white. They're about 54% non-white. So we've got, of course, work to do in that area here in St. Petersburg, and we know that. But with that admissions profile changing, we rely heavily upon St. Pete College to help provide pathways for students in this county and in the region, really, Tampa Bay region, to come into USF. So Tanja and I work very closely together with our staff on things like Pinellas Access to Higher Education, which is a pathway for graduates from Pinellas High Schools to come through St. Pete College, get started there, come here with scholarshiping and some support services that we didn't have previously. And then what's the other one that's been there for a long time, that the seamless transfer?
It's just the regular transfer program.
The regular 2+2, but there's 18 different majors that are seamlessly 2+2 that we've worked on, and we work on other things together constantly because things have changed in education. And I wrote this down because she's younger than me. She remembers things I don't. So 79% of our summer students are not on campus, but they're full-time. 79% of our full-time summer students aren't on campus. 45% of our fall semester students last fall weren't on campus, but they're full-time students. Okay, we have a large commuter population. We have 1,000 beds on campus, but we got about 4,800 heads that come here. So things aren't the traditional thinking that we're a residential campus. Everybody comes here and there's a big family kumbaya. That's not the way things are anymore. So we have done lots of things to provide support services for those students who do come here full and part-time, commute and everything else, including things for students of color. We have King Suites, a living learning community for students who really want to explore deeply the ideals of Martin Luther King and live in the same area in the Res Hall and work with mentors who work with them. We have other organizations on campus and clubs like that as well. But still, because we're still lagging behind where we were prior to consolidation, we're not where we want to be. Right now, and I checked this morning, 8% of our admitted students for this coming summer, fall, first time in college students, 8% of those students are African American. And we used to be 12% of our admitted students coming in the summer, fall were African American, so we're not there yet. 23% of our FTIC students admitted for the summer, fall, 23% of those are Hispanic, Latinx students. That's about where we were prior to consolidation. 53% of the students admitted so far for summer, fall coming in to this campus are white. And then we have Asian students. We have two or more races has been increasing every single year, so we're up over 5% of our students claiming two or more races. So we've got work to do because, as you know, you want to go to school with people that look like you, that come from backgrounds like yours, where you feel comfortable and where you feel that you're a part of something. With other people that you have a lot of commonalities with. So we know we need to work more in that area, and we're doing everything we can to get there, but we got to call on the community to help. I mean, really, you've got high-achieving students here. It's great. Tampa campus is great, but we've got 38 undergraduate majors here, folks, and we need those students here on this campus that come out of the diverse high schools of this county. And they need to understand what we have to offer here. They need to come here, visit here, get comfortable here, and see that we do have groups of students that look like them, that think like them. They're just not in large numbers yet. But if they'll come here, we will grow those numbers. And we are committed to it. Our faculty and staff are committed to it. We wouldn't be doing the TRHT and everything else if we weren't committed to it.
I want to give Dr. Tadlock credit for the path program and the idea, he knew that things were going to change. And he said, okay, we've got to find another way for us to ensure that our minority community can still thrive and go to school. And coming through SPC, the GPA for admission is lower if you're a transfer student. And you have a better chance of being able to transfer in. And so he called me and said, okay, we need to do something. And it was his idea. And when you have two colleges that work so closely together, it's a great mix. And we know we're different, but we have the same goal, and that's to fuel the community and help people have better lives and get better jobs. Neither of us want a student to attend our institution and still be poor. Yeah. You know, we don't want to educate them into poverty. Yeah. We want to educate them into prosperity. And so under Martin's leadership, there's several things he's reached out to me on to help our underprepared students or our students of color. And I just want you guys to give him a round of applause. I think it's worth really mentioning.
And can I add one more thing? Our transfer students are highly successful here. And that's because of the partnership and the work that they do at St. Pete College. Also, African-American students who come here as a freshman come back in the sophomore year at a higher rate than any other group. Their retention rate is higher. It's the highest. So if we get them here, they're successful here. We've got to get them here.
Okay, a couple closing questions before our members come to the mic. Dr. Williams, I know your story, but I think that your story is important for people to know. Is an American story, is a inspiring story. Do you mind just touching on your story, how you got here, and brag on yourself a little bit and tell us where the college is going the next few years under your leadership?
Thank you so much. You know, I think that I'm probably one of the opposite types of presidents. The kind of person who started right here in South St. Pete in poverty with a single mother who was a single mom, and she had three kids, and she did not go to college, but she knew that we were going to go. And she could not help me, but she said, you need to figure it out. And I'm so glad that there were so many people in the community that stood in the gap for me, that knew I had no clue what I was doing, that wanted to help me move along. And I didn't know why, but I was very grateful. And many of these individuals didn't go to college. They just wanted to help me achieve that goal. And so I came from very, very humble beginnings. I worked for a swimming pool company. Anybody ever had a pool built by George's Pools or Pools by George? They were one of the first African-American millionaires in Pinellas County. I didn't know that. But during high school, they let me work there. And I did the books. And then after college, I came back to work there because I loved it. And she said, you know, you've achieved all we could do here. Why don't you go down to that college and apply? And I'm like, why would I do that? And she said, go down there. You need a better job. I can't give you benefits, et cetera. And I started as a financial aid accounting clerk in 1986, 87. And that's the only other place I ever worked up to this day. And just had an opportunity to go from the academic side to student affairs to administration, and never thought that I would be a college president. And my mom did not get to see this day. And she passed away right when I got into my doctoral program. And I told her, I'm not going. And she said, no, I'm gonna die. Don't let my death be in vain. Finish what you started. Be the first. And that's how I'm here.
Thank you. Dr. Tadlock, again, we say congratulations. You have received all the awards and the trophies and the plaques that there is to give. Will you touch on this experience and the challenges and the opportunities for the college as they select your successor and they map out the future?
Tanja's like a sister from another mother. We've talked about that.
She's all the time.
Yeah, I had to go to the Air Force to go to college. It took me a while to get there because my parents didn't support me going to college at all. My daddy said, go to work. Why are you even thinking about college. That's stupid. So it took me a while, but we got there and got where we could hopefully help people. That's what we were all about. That's what we're doing. This campus, I'm just going to be candid with you again. Look around. We're limited here in where we can go in terms of the physical place that we are. We could probably handle right now about 6,000 students on this physical site with the accommodations we currently have in terms of classroom space, labs, and so forth. But if you want us to grow, we're going to have to find a way to do it. And it's not as easy as, well, just get a place at the Trop and students will go there. No, they won't. They won't. Ask Sean. They're not going to walk over to the Trop to go to class or go to a lab. It's got to be, you know, right here close to where we are. So we need more room here. We are limited physically in terms of growth. If we want 10,000 students down in St. Pete, then we've got to find a way to make that happen here, right next to where we are, adjacent to this location. We are a R1 institution now. Faculty roles have changed. Admissions has changed. Expectations has changed. Everything has changed. Don't confuse a comprehensive regional university with an R1, Research 1, Research Intensive University. They are different worlds, because I was tenured in an R1 and I left it, because I didn't want to be a faculty in an R1 research intensive university, and I never told my staff that, so don't think that means that I'm not happy. I'm just saying that's not my chosen path. That's not what I wanted to do. And some of our faculty didn't want that either. And they've either left or they've adjusted and they've changed what they do. But it's a very different world. So the research focus here means you gotta have more labs, research labs, you gotta have more teaching labs. You got to have more space. You got to have those kind of students that want to pursue that kind of opportunity here in St. Petersburg. If that's what's important, that's what you got to do. And so I see the future of this being heavily dependent upon our legislators and Pinellas delegation members' investment in that. If they don't invest and continue to invest in it, it's just not going to happen. Tanja knows that. I mean, we in higher ed know that. There's three research campuses now. There used to be one. That's a completely different kind of setting and environment, and with that comes demands for more resources, which brings in more resources. We had the highest research generation this year of any time in the history of this 52-year history of campus. In other words, more research dollars were brought in to St. Pete this year than ever before. 36 out of 136, I think it was, Denny, something along that, 30-something faculty here were funded with research awards this year. That's what, a fourth of the faculty here, basically, received research funding, grants and awards and contracts this year, the highest on record. Donor contributions, it was the highest on record this year as well. So we've got that thing moving. It's just that transition time, you know, needed for these things to happen. But it's
Dr. Hallock, since you brought it up, I don't know how much you can say, but and we don't have the Tallahassee folks here, but Commissioner Flowers is here. There's a lot of conversations going on. What part of the future can look like something at Abbott when it are at the Trop site? Because that's 86 to 120 acres between the two locations where build out has to happen over the next 10 to 20 years. So are you at liberty to talk about any hope, dreams, conversations you've had as these elections and this finalization is going on?
The only conversations we've had is about the possibility of a research center located at the Trop, and then faculty are pursuing an NSF proposal that will allow Booker Creek to be an environmentally sound creek coming through the city down into the marina and making it more of a teaching opportunity as well for students. That's the only conversation we've had is a research center of some type being part of the Trop.
Okay. Dr. Williams, you got anything to say?
No, I wanted to say that when I think of USF, and I'm a Bull, I'm very proud of that, I think of expanding beyond St. Petersburg. I think of the whole county. Mm. And I think of people deciding to not come because it's too far, like from Tarpon or what have you. The online piece is going to help greatly with that. But being that SPC is countywide, I would love to see USF somewhere near Clearwater to kind of grab some of the other members of the county to come. We're at a point where online is definitely taking hold. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges, though, is that not everyone is a good online learner. And I tell my faculty, they like, but that's what they want. I say, well, would you give, I'm overweight. Would you keep giving me cake because that's what I want? Or would you give me some salad because it's healthier for me? And so we can definitely expand with online, but when you talk about our underprepared populations, they thrive better in a in-person, face-to-face environment. So for me, I'd like to continue, as Martin as I have started, working together so we can bring more master programs mid-county, more doctoral programs mid-county, so we can grab the rest of those team members who are not coming to our wonderful university. And then for SPC, we see ourselves as a first responder to workforce. That's our job, is to meet the needs of our workforce. And so for the future, I don't see how we can go farther in education without bringing those short-term credentials. When I grew up at Bogasiega High School, we learned shop and cooking and sewing, and they had mechanics and all these different things we did. But we're not getting a lot of that, and our children are not growing up with those other fields and opportunities that we need to open up to them. We are going to be looking at disposing some of our facilities because we've just expanded too far and online has taken hold. And we'll be keeping at least 6 or 7 of those facilities. But I do think that coming together and bringing more master and doctoral programs mid-county would be helpful to our county and would grow the university as well.
Great, thank you.
If you are a member of the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club, please come to the mic with your question, state your name, ask your question, and then take your seat, please. The mic here to my left. Members of Suncoast Tiger Bay Club.
My name is Morris Kurtz.
Okay.
It's Morris Kurtz. I live near the campus. It was my pleasure to walk here along Booker Creek as it came up to the new ARC Innovation Center and watching the otters swim around in there on the way over here today. But some of us have been around St. Pete for an awful long time and we're familiar with the talk about Albert Whitted Airport that comes up, and when we hear things like, well, we need to be finding places adjacent to this campus. So it did well up 15 years ago underneath everything that was happening with the airport. So what are we going to do? Are we going to go after the Mahaffey, or are we going to go after Albert Whitted Airport?
You want me to answer that?
You answer that one.
I have no idea.
I told them if they're going to do anything with the airport, we want part of it. That's all I've said. But there's a certain senator in town that said, Martin, told me to be quiet. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Sean. Thank you both for being here and for your leadership in Tampa Bay. You've both done a tremendous job. Thinking about, you know, retention of students, you know, and you talked a little bit about bringing students back on campus. I've been really fortunate to be a student leader in the student government. And I've heard from a lot of students, one of the big challenges today, of course, which is a challenge everywhere, is affordable housing and transportation. I know that these are incredibly multifaceted issues, but I was just sort of curious what role you think higher education institutions can play in bringing those sort of opportunities for higher education you know, from the standpoint of more housing for students, as well as transportation initiatives, not just for students that are on campus now, but trying to retain talent once students graduate.
Perfect. I do think that there's space for higher education to be involved in affordable housing. And it's not even just for students. It's very hard to hire employees when they cannot find anywhere to live. And so even some of the facilities that we're disposing of, we're actually looking for someone who's willing to build some housing, because what happens is you have new people you hire and they live in Riverview or somewhere else, and they're just tired of driving. They're tired of the 1 hour one way, and they find a job somewhere else and you don't keep them long. And then for our students, I think many of them will go to online learning because of the problem with nowhere to live. And as I mentioned, not everyone is a good online learner. So for me, we have the collaborative labs at SPC, and we have the public policy and solutions group. And we've already held some housing summits with leaders, including Commissioner Flowers, which was a regional housing initiative that was very successful. And I think that one of the challenges, the things that I'm learning, is there are just some cities that are not in favor of affordable housing. And that's very difficult because we have people who need that to live in the city. So what's happening is they'll come and work, earn our money, and go back to where they live and spend it there and not spend it here in Pinellas County. And so we have to find a solution to housing if we're going to keep our county thriving. The colleges may be helpful. One, we can help fill the spots. If there's some housing opportunities, we've got people who need them. But I think the other piece is being the facilitator of the conversation and letting people understand who's living in Pinellas, who wants to move to Pinellas, and who's leaving. Because there is a migration out of here. And we need to be concerned about that if we want to keep our county really moving forward.
And I'm going to add, our students living in our res halls, actually, we're going to fill them, I'm sure, in the fall, because, you know, it costs less to live in our res hall now than it does putting 3-4 so students in an apartment around this area. I think it's the most critical thing that St. Pete has to face is the affordable housing issue. We are understaffed on this campus. We are having people turn down positions on this campus because of the cost of housing and the commute. And when they find all that out, they withdraw. And we are, I think, in student affairs, I think Jake just left, but almost, I think they're understaffed in the USF at large across Tampa Bay by almost 30% right now, just in the student affairs area, which is probably a fourth of the university staff is in student affairs. I mean, it's happening with faculty, talented, world-class faculty that we get in a pool, and then they start digging around and they ask questions and they find out, and then some other university attracts them. So we're competing with those top universities, but they look at cost of living, and we've lost some. For this coming fall, there's been failed searches on this campus that I'm aware of that happened because they got attracted to another university at a comparable level, providing all the things they want, but the housing and the cost of living was so much better there, they went there.
All right, we're making great time. Ms. Landris and then Dr. Keisha Benson.
Susan Landris. I had a question, given the legislature's and governor's attitudes towards CRT and SEL and tenure, how do either one of you as public institutions feel that that will affect both your incoming students and your faculty? Thank you.
Well, you put all of that in one sentence. All of the things that you've talked about, some apply to some groups, some don't apply to others. So like the tenure one applies to the universities, but does not apply to the state colleges. So I will let you handle that one, Martin. You got it? Okay. So when it comes to CRT, there are funds tied to that, which makes that very difficult. Some of my faculty have expressed concern about, you know, how do you make sure that you're giving the accurate history without doing, you know, without mm-hmm. violating that rule. And there's another part to that that you may not understand. Students can now record the faculty in the classroom as they're speaking to it, like this. And so it's causing, you know, faculty to be very uncomfortable. At the community college, we have not had any student complaints or issues regarding it, but we've had a lot from the faculty side, especially those who teach history, American government, saying, well, does this scratch this out of the books? And so I would think that in the fall, we're gonna have a whole lot of controversy on the campuses to prepare the faculty for it, to help them, but to also serve the students. But it's a rule that's in action that we can't change it. And so it's a tough spot to be in. Tough spot.
Go ahead, Doc.
And I'll just add, if tenure goes away, we won't compete with our national peers because faculty won't come. They, especially those who do cutting edge research that at times can be controversial, and they don't have a protection for that.
Hello, thank you. I'm Dr. Keisha Benson. I was born and raised in St. Petersburg. My mother was an educator. So I went off to FAMU to do my undergrad and graduate degree, went off to UNC Chapel Hill Research One to do my PhD and my second master's. And I know for me, when I grew up here, I didn't see myself in Pinellas County or St. Petersburg, that future. When I come back here and I look at our students now, we think about, we've already kind of talked about housing situations, but also considering just the wage gap that we have right now in our community. When you speak to workforce development and educating the prosperity, what does that look like? What are your relationships like with the workforce? What are your placement numbers? So how do we ensure that people not only have jobs when they come out, but jobs that actually have a living wage where they can live and grow here and prosper?
That is an excellent question. I know many of you have heard about House Bill 1507, which is the workforce bill, and it holds colleges accountable for the training that it provides to ensure that the training we provide lead to high wage paying jobs. Not only high wage paying jobs, but they've given us how much money a student who earns this credential should be making. And so colleges, I can only say for the state colleges, there's 28 of us, we call ourselves the Great 28. And for us, we serve about 800,000 students a year as a system. And so we're now removing some of those highly enrolled programs that don't yield to high wages. SPC, out of the 28 of us, we are number one in high wage paying jobs. And so we have been holding that designation for 4 or 5 years. And so I'm real proud of that. But I think it's time for us to really look at every single thing we offer, credential and degree. And we may have to say, not may, we have to say, this no longer cuts the mustard. Students are not making good money. They're not living better job lives. They're not getting better jobs. But House Bill 1507, the state has already looked at Pinellas County, already looked at what are the high wage areas, who's offering what programs, what should not be offered, and how we should move forward. There is a way for us to appeal some of the things like childcare. It's on the list to be cut. Well, we cannot not have childcare. We have to have that training so people will have someone to watch their kids. So we're looking at different ways to appeal that. One of the things that I do is we have what's called workforce clusters, where we meet with the workforce to find out what are the new things that are coming out. For example, if I hadn't been on the elevator in Washington and heard Melissa Satius all the way, we were in Tallahassee, say we need more line workers, I wouldn't have known, because education is too far apart from the workforce. So even what happened in COVID, we have no idea what the new jobs are that were created because of COVID. Therefore, we won't have the training for people to fill those jobs. And so now we're going to the workforce saying, what are y'all doing? What's new? What's coming out? What training do we need to be working on? Because the thing that Martin and I hate the most is to go to workforce and hear them say, we have to shut down because we don't have any workers. We want to provide that. And so we're being held accountable for that. And SBC has never been afraid of placement. We do a lot of that. And now we have a total placement division that works on, this is a student that's at 40 credits. Okay, we need to work with them on getting a job. We need to get their resumes ready. We need to do this. So it's very intentional and very strategic, and it helps the students know that they have the job before they finish. So we're held accountable by the state to do that as well. That bill just came out this session. It's passed, it's approved, and it's off to the races, so.
And we're subject to the same. We also, in the SUS, there's 12 state universities, and they are ranked based on performance-based metrics. One of those metrics is placement in the career field related to the student's pursuit. Another one is their average starting salary in those placements. And so those are metrics, and they're tracked, and we have to report on those. And that's just part of what we do. Absolutely.
Sorry. Okay, our last question.
Hi, I'm Jessica Hooper. I'm a board member of the Treasure Island Madeira Beach Chamber of Commerce, and this is a perfect segue because I wanted to ask you how you ensure that your degrees that you're offering match up to workforce needs and how they're still relevant and valuable. So you've kind of already hit on it quite a bit, so I don't know if USF wants to go a little bit deeper about what the activities you are performing to engage with the business community to make sure they're still relevant.
Yeah, I stole things from Tanja. We had, we had academic cluster meetings over a year-long time period in Pinellas County with various groups around the county. People were invited. We talked to workforce leaders in the community about what are those needs out there, and then we organized those into what we call five academic clusters that become a priority for programming going forward. The one thing I want to do, though, is a caution, because I come out of liberal education. An educated person is prepared to work, and they're prepared to change careers maybe two or three or four or five times in their lifetime. So we've got to understand that certain things we offer, we're going to offer, even if the job, quote, isn't directly connected to it. I mean, we're going to offer those majors here where people learn how to think and learn how to create and learn how to do things that are going to make them an educated human being so they can function in society across, no matter what the job might be and might change out to be later, and they might go to grad school for something more specific. So we're going to offer those too. I don't want to get down the rabbit hole of, you know, the university has to offer strictly something that leads to a job in a position at this rate. I think that is severely, I think it's the wrong thing to do. We prepare people for careers, yes. We listen to the community, and we have clusters of programs that do that, yes. But we also want to make sure we're educating people who can change throughout life, because I didn't plan to be here. This wasn't my job path when I got out of college. And I bet most of you sitting in this room didn't end up exactly where you thought you were gonna be.
I think also both colleges, we have advisory committees by workforce areas that keep us abreast of what's happening in the area. And we end up building the majority of our partnerships through those advisory committees based upon the workforce area. So we're pretty intentional about it.
Our winner is Mrs. Landris. Mrs. Landris, will you come up and receive your mug and your miniature tiger?
Thank you.
Thank you. Did your husband vote for you?
I have no idea. We don't all even agree.
It's 1 o'clock. We had a great day. Thank you for your time. Help me celebrate the work of both of these two. And thank you, Dr. Tadlock, again, for all that you've done. And thank you, Dr. Williams, for being here today. This has been a great day. We have not had this kind of event, to my knowledge. And we look forward to having Dr. Fernandez in this conversation in the future. Have a great day. Have a great week. Go Rays.